Now, President-elect Joe Biden announced his pick to lead the Department of Defense yesterday, retired four-star Army General Lloyd Austin. Austin would be the first African-American to serve as defense secretary. He'd also be the second former military officer to hold the job in the last 4 years after Jim Mattis's tenure during the Trump administration. It's a job that's historically been held by a civilian, and Biden's pick is raising some concern about the balance between civilian and military authority in the Pentagon. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of another former general being nominated as Secretary of Defense? Do you think it's a good pick? Are you disappointed that Biden didn't choose a civilian for the role? What questions do you have about the history and the reasoning behind this civil-military balance? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Richard Cohn is Professor Emeritus of History and Peace, War, and Defense at the University of North Carolina. He earned his master's and doctorate degrees from UW-Madison. His books include Eagle and Sword, The Federalists and the Creation of the Military Establishment in America. Dick, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Nice to be here. Honored to be with you.
Good to have you back here with us in Wisconsin. Well, what was your reaction to hearing about this nomination of retired General Lloyd Austin to the Defense Department?
Well, I was surprised and, to be frank about it, upset, because we've only had two retired professional military officers in that job, and both were at a crisis time, and both for specific reasons. And we have a long tradition, goes back even over a century before the United States was independent, of civilian control of the military. And you can't have civilian control if you don't have a civilian in charge.
People might hear this and say, well, you know, why not have a former military officer? They know our defense system, our military, maybe better than anybody. It would make sense to have them there. What would you say to that about the need to have civilians at those top spots?
Well, it's a longstanding tradition in the United States. And right after World War II, with so many military officers retired and having served successfully, Congress passed a law that you had to be 10 years retired before you could fill the job of Secretary of the Military Establishment and even the service secretaries. So it's a political decision. And if you go back and read the Constitution, you realize that the job of the military is to defend society, and it has to represent society to the military and represent the president and the Congress to the military. And it's a political job. It's got wide-ranging responsibilities. It's not just a military job. National defense, national security is much broader than just military affairs. And so the thought was is that you needed someone who had the political skills, the political experience in order to oversee the military, to make the major decisions, including the military. And so that law was passed, and it was then in the early 21st century reduced to 7 years. But Congress has to pass a waiver, both houses, in order to permit a retired officer to have the job if they haven't been retired 7 years. And that'll be required for General Austin.
President-elect Biden today on stage with retired General Austin said, hey, this is a guy who respects the balance of power, the civilian control over the military. General Austin said the same thing pretty much. Do you find that reassuring, at least?
Well, that was true of General Marshall in 1950 and General Mattis in 2017. I mean, you can have all sorts of assurances, but the Secretary of Defense is the only civilian in the chain of command from the president by law and Constitution all the way down to a new private in basic training. So it isn't reassuring. I mean, our professional military understands that. They subscribe to civilian control. I've spent the last 25 years teaching and explaining it to military officers. They don't always understand the requirements for making civilian control operate and not to fill the void if there is not civilian decisiveness in the job. And so you know, as a result, those assurances are not the best. And I'm sure that they're sincere on General Austin's part, but I'm sure that there'll be hearings if the nomination proceeds. And the general will be asked about that and pressed about that.
Talking to Richard Cohn, professor at the University of North Carolina, about the announcement of General Lloyd Austin as president-elect's nominee to run the Defense Department as Secretary of Defense, and concerns about having military or retired military officers in that position, usually held by civilians. You could join in with your thoughts, your reactions, and your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I think some of the reaction I've been seeing here is, okay, maybe we had this one exception for General Mattis, and Democrats in particular, I think, hoping that a Biden administration would not follow that, not hammer home that precedent twice in such a short period of time. Do you think if this goes through this time, Dick, that it's just going to make it a new normal to have generals or other retired officers in a position like this?
Well, it does, Rob. It does set a worrisome precedent that was expressed in 2017. I have to go back that 4 years. I spoke to members of the House Armed Services Committee about it at their invitation. And the feeling was that, all right, we because of President Trump's inexperience and questionable temperament and judgment, and the fact that he'd picked a national security advisor like Michael Flynn at that time, who was also questionable, we'll make an exception this time. We need somebody who's widely experienced, who we really trust. And General Mattis was and still is a legend in the Marine Corps and the military. But it sets a bad precedent. And in fact, the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Jack Reed, the senator from Rhode Island, has himself a West Point graduate who served in the 82nd Airborne, said, I'm not going to vote for anybody this generation again who has been a retired officer. So and I don't think this is not a precedent any more than General Marshall was a precedent in 1950.
What do you make of what some people have pointed to as an increasing politicization among high-ranking former military officers in this last election, supporting President Trump or President-elect Biden along the way, and having a more, I guess, vocal role in politics than they might have been expected to in the past?
Well, that trend really began in the 1980s and 1990s. I've studied it as a scholar. I've written it about it. And it is a very worrisome trend because senior officers and, in fact, officers in the armed services are supposed to be and are nonpartisan. But this doesn't mean they're necessarily nonpartisan in their own minds. They've begun voting in much greater numbers beginning in the 1950s. They began in the 1990s to start a few of them. And I want to emphasize this is very few of the retired flag officers, generals and admirals, have been endorsing people for a political office, particularly the presidency. And what it does is that it erodes the confidence of the American people in the nonpartisanship of the military. I think most Americans respect and admire the American military, but they don't adequately differentiate between generals in the National Guard and in the Army or in the Marine Corps, whether they're retired or active duty. And so those who endorse people, and I've written about that, and some senior officers, both on active duty and retired, have said to me, this is a bad thing to do because it erodes the trust of the presidents and of the Congress that these people are nonpartisan. And they are giving their purely professional advice, and they don't have a desire to see a certain policy outcome or a certain decision, and they are arrogating to themselves a desire for certain policy and decision outcomes. It's not healthy, that's why the vast majority of them don't do it. But when they do it, it's kind of like it's kind of like an arms race between the Democrats and the Republicans. How many of these people vote for have endorsed X or and vote endorsed Y? They're using the nonpartisanship and the reputation for nonpartisanship on the part of the military to commit utterly partisan acts. And in the last few years, they have, in fact, done that in the nominating conventions. You saw that recent elections. You saw it in 2016. And it's just a terrible trend. It's unprofessional on their part. You know, when you retire from uniform, you don't stop being a professional officer after several decades any more than when I retired from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, I began to endorse plagiarism. You don't give up your professional values.
We're talking to Richard Cohen, Professor Emeritus of History at the University of North Carolina, about what Joe Biden's nomination of a former general to be Secretary of Defense means for the balance between civilian and military leadership in the armed forces. You can join in with your reactions and questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the choice of General Lloyd Austin for Defense Secretary? Do you think his experience leading American troops makes him a good pick, or do you agree with our guests that civilian leadership is what's meant to be at the Pentagon, what should be at the Pentagon? If you're a veteran yourself, how do you feel about all this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Richard Cohen, military historian at the University of North Carolina, looking at the role of civilian leadership in the armed forces after President-elect Biden nominated former General Lloyd Austin to lead the Department of Defense. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this nomination? Do you think that there should be another general running the Department of Defense, or should we go back to the norm required by law for the most part of having civilians run the Department of Defense? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Before we go to our callers, we've had, Dick, generals from Washington to Eisenhower with some Grants and I think a Harrison in there rise to the office of the presidency and I don't know, got away okay with that. Does that say, hey, maybe it's okay for high-ranking officers to get into politics?
Well, I think all of those, with maybe the exception of George Washington, had running their military establishments civilians. Once they get elected to office, they've gone to the other side. They've become political leaders. They've faced the American electorate. They've gotten elected. They're the choice of the American people. And that puts them in very much a different category. So I've often said to military officers, if you want to get involved in policy and politics, decision making, you know, go and stand before the American people and run for office. I think another issue is involved with General Austin. It's not just the fact that he's a professional officer retired, but is he the right person for the job? And professional officers, you know, rise in a very isolated and often a very specific profession. And they don't become really broadly knowledgeable about national defense, sometimes never, until they reach the highest ranks. And so one of the jobs is to take the administration to the military. And General Austin is an Army general. Almost all of his experience, except two of his most senior jobs, are with the Army. Will he be able to adjudicate the squeeze on resources coming with a defense establishment and budget that's $740 billion? There's going to have to be some cuts, some leveling off, some choices made, and he's going to have issues with that. And I think that the armed services are going to. A whole lot of other issues involved, I think, with having a professional officer in charge.
Let's bring on a caller now. Robert is with us in southern Wisconsin. Robert, hi.
Hello. Yeah, your caller or your speaker is speaking that seems to be insinuating that once a flag or command level officer or career officer leaves the military service, he shouldn't be allowed to speak his opinion broadly to the American people, be it in a political context. I find that to be a dangerous precedent. You have to remember, these officers may have served their time in the military and worn their uniform. They are still citizens of this United States and are subject to all the rights and responsibilities thereof of a citizen of this United States. Granted, some of them may have been isolated, but they still have access to information that the general public doesn't.
Gotcha, Robert. Thanks for the call. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, to begin with, I did not argue that, nor did I say that. They have plenty of outlets to make their opinions known. Many of them are asked by the media to opine on certain issues at various times. They can certainly write. They write op-eds. They can write books. They can write articles. And we should hear from them. And that's particularly when it involves their professional knowledge and their professional understanding. A long tradition of that goes all the way back two centuries, officers writing their memoirs, and they're valuable documents. So I think you've misread me. I think you think you've heard something that you really didn't hear and that I didn't really say.
To distinguish, you were making the case that they shouldn't directly be endorsing candidates, though. Is that a more fair characterization of what you were arguing earlier?
Yes. What I was saying is that I don't think that a retired senior officer kind of representing or seeming to represent the armed forces and the professional military with its nonpartisan and professional reputation should be committing a partisan act. And you have to note that well over 80% of these people never do that. And you have to ask why. Why do a few of them feel that their partisan decisions should be broadcast to the American people and used by the politicians for their purposes? It's not because their first name is Joe or Sally or John or Richard. It's because their first name is General or Admiral.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Debbie now in Eagle River. Debbie, hi.
Hi. Very interesting. I wasn't aware of this division from a civilian appointee to the military. And what would the qualifications be of a civilian to serve in this role?
Well, the qualifications would be wide and broad experience, either in government or sometimes in business, a record of ability to make decisions, to work with all sorts of people, an understanding of organizations, hopefully of military affairs, of foreign policy. Perhaps they'd served as a youth in the military, although that's not required. Some technical expertise. We've had all sorts of people serve as Secretary of Defense and secretaries of the different armed services. And depending on their experience, some have been terrific. Some have not been, and it's not always the experience that's made the difference. One colleague of mine once wrote a book called "The Almost Impossible Job of Secretary of Defense," and it is a very difficult job. That's the biggest section of the government. It's the largest part of our expenditures, except for the social programs like Medicare and Social Security. There are millions of people in the Department of Defense, some in uniform, hundreds of thousands civilian, and so it requires requires a great deal of skill, understanding, and experience.
I want to ask about the fundamental concept of civilian control of the military, why that's so important, and I guess the contrast when we see countries, societies that don't have that that strict line.
Well, you have to understand that the military is one of the most authoritarian institutions in society, and it has the greatest power of coercion over society and was understood by the founders of this country to believe, to understand that. All the way back to Julius Caesar taking over the Roman Republic and creating the empire, or Oliver Cromwell disbanding the parliament and taking over the British government, the English government, not the British government, in the 1640s. This is a powerful institution. It commands a huge proportion of the financial resources of a society. And it's used to imposing its will on its own people, as well as the people it's facing. And it uses violence. It has guns. Now, we're not worried about the military taking over American society. I say to military officers, do you really think you can control New York City in the face of 35 or 40,000 New York police officers? And how about Idaho and Montana with their personal militias, or Texas, where people are armed to the teeth with all sort of weapons? That's not the point. The point is that you need civilian control, because the purpose of the military is to defend society, not to define it, not to impose or even allow military values and military perspectives to infuse our culture. It already has happened to a large degree since the Depression, World War II, and the Cold War, that the country has adopted military ideas and attitudes, often to our benefit, certainly for our defense, but certainly in organizational ways. Business has adopted military ways, and the military has adopted business practices. But you want, in a democracy that loves liberty, where the people are independent and independent-minded, you want those values of liberty and democracy to infuse society and to inform it.
We'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's Richard Cohen from the University of North Carolina, looking at the likely nominee for Secretary of Defense. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time.